We made this.
Podcast that knows that blue curacao is actually an orange liqueur. I am Ashley Thomas, aka the Nerdy Blogger, and joining me today is my guest, We Made This co-host, Clara Cook. How are you, Clara?
I'm good, Ashley. I'm good. I'm feeling be strong and, you know, feisty, and I haven't transformed quite into another shape yet, but I'm feeling like maybe I could if I get annoyed enough. No, I'm good. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you. And I apologize. I should have asked, do you say your name Clara or Clara? Because I just said it in the most redneck Southern way I possibly could.
So I live in the UK, so a lot of people call me Clara, but I grew up with American parents.
Ah.
So I'm very used to being called Clara.
Okay. So which do you prefer?
I answer to both. And sometimes I do answer to Sarah or Sarah. Anything that sounds remotely close to Clara or Clara. Like, Sarah. I'm like, yeah. But yeah, so I have responded to Claire before. I mean, it's whatever's easier for you to say, Ashley.
No, they are both equally easy. I just wanted to make sure I got it right.
It's spelt like how you'd imagine it, though. There's no extra letters.
No Y's,
no N's, nothing silent.
Well, I definitely have a Y in my name, and it is definitely where you would think. So, well, very good, very good. Well, we are here today to chat She-Hulk episode 4, Jen Walters versus Donnie Blaze. So, Jennifer Walters versus Donnie Blaze. So, I had some fun with this episode. I'll say this just broadly. I think it's might be my least favorite thus far in the series, but you know, we're only 4 episodes in, we got 5 to go, and I've really enjoyed everything on the whole. How about you?
Yeah, I have really enjoyed everything on the whole. I should say that I come from a background of having no knowledge of the comic, the graphic novel, the comics. So I didn't even know there was a She-Hulk until, actually, I think it was you that started talking about it online. And then I was like, oh, hang on a second, there's a She-Hulk? And then I started Googling it. This was months and months and months ago before the show came on TV. And then I was like, how are they going to do this? Like, I don't understand because the Hulk is a very, you know, it's an accident. It's a very rare type of thing. Like, how does she become Hulk? And then I was like, oh, she's related to him. And that's exciting, you know, you get to see sort of the background of him as well. And then I saw the trailer. I thought, oh, this looks different. It's going to be, you know, funny. And she's going to actually walk around and behave as the She-Hulk. It's not just going to be that she's going to like rage out and kind of lose awareness and just scream and stuff. She's actually going to walk around and talk to people as a superhuman being. And then I waited a while until I think we had like 3 episodes, and then I watched 3 episodes on one go. So I didn't watch them week by week. So for me, I was like coming to all of this completely new, you know, compared to say, I think for a lot of people that I've seen online who had some sort of knowledge of this aspect of Marvel. And so maybe had some ideas of what they would like to see. And, you know, they were looking for cameos. I know that a lot of people are looking for a particular cameo and waiting for it to appear. I had no knowledge of that, so I feel like I came to it like completely with fresh eyes, and I mean, I've really enjoyed it so far. It's been really funny. There were bits that I have laughed out loud, and it's also nice to see a superhero who's not so tortured about their, you know, powers. You know,
right.
She's actually kind of a very positive person, a very sort of practical. I'm going to go get it. Going to go do it. Going to go do what I need to do, my job. Compared to some of the other Avengers, you know, who. I mean, don't get me wrong, dark, angsty characters are also very entertaining to watch, but this is a bit of a difference, I think, compared to some of the other shows. It feels a bit more like one of the Miss Marvel, Hawkeye shows. Hawkeye was very funny as well.
Right.
I miss Marvel, actually, compared to something like, you know, anything to do with Thanos, which is always quite dark.
Yeah. She-Hulk is definitely a little more ground level versus cosmic.
Yeah.
And it, for me, at least, I found that I tend to prefer, I don't get me wrong, it's a superhero. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to have fun with it. But I found that my preferences tend to lean a little more ground level. Because, you know, prior to Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk, Hawkeye was my favorite of the shows. And I still really love all of those for different reasons. But I tend to prefer the ground level heroes a little more as well.
Yeah. I also feel like She-Hulk also has the capacity to do really weird stuff.
Yes.
So it takes it's a little less serious, so maybe a little less po-faced, a little less earnest in some of the Marvel stuff. I mean, obviously, you know, it's for a lot of the Marvel, like, stuff, you know, about good versus evil and doing a duty and being brave and sacrificing yourself and everything. It's all also very entertaining and worthy. But there's some very sort of surreal aspects to She-Hulk that did actually remind me of some of the stuff that kind of came up in, like, in Loki and everything. But very, yeah. I mean, in I guess She-Hulk is operating in the same world as Jessica Jones, right? But you couldn't find two more different stories about two more different.
And those are two of my favorite comic book characters of all time. So I would love for, you know, this. I feel like She-Hulk is a perfect opportunity for Jessica Jones to show up. Yeah, because I want to watch them, like, both drink whiskey together. I think that's fun. Very cool. Yeah. Neat. Yeah, and for background, you know, you've seen me talk online. She-Hulk is my all-time favorite superhero. I've said that many times here on the show. And so I've been familiar with her for quite a while. Really, you know, I've read each of her main series. I'm a couple issues behind on the current She-Hulk series, but I've read Savage She-Hulk, which is the original She-Hulk series, Sensational She-Hulk, started in the late 80s, went through like the early 90s, ran for 5 years. That's my favorite She-Hulk series. I also really love the Dan Slott and Peter David series that started in the mid 2000s. That one is really fun. And it's that series that I feel like this show is kind of drawing the most from. There were a couple of shorter She-Hulk series that were a little more serious in the, I want to say around 2014, 2015. And then there was another one in 2017. Those were both shorter series, a little more serious tone, but you still have like kind of the fun and sass that is She-Hulk. And I really enjoyed those series too, for different reasons. But my favorite She-Hulk stories are the ones with humor, with some comedy. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the character that they're not really shying away from in this series is you're really getting an illustration. This is what it's like to be a woman in your 30s, which I am a woman in my 30s. You know, my experience is not quite the same, but there's definitely a lot that I find relatable in She-Hulk. And I think, I mean, just be honest, we don't see a lot of that on film and television, at least not in this sense. What do you think about how the show is addressing women's issues?
I think it does it very well. I think it does it very well. I think it does it in a way that is very understandable and not preachy. But I mean, I'm all in favor of preachy feminist television too. but you know, if you want to hit maybe a wide audience, maybe you want to hit some male audience, then it's, you know, it's easy. It's probably better to try and slip them these messages in a way that they don't realize they're getting them. But it's you know, there's just stuff like in this particular episode, she talks about how she can't find clothes to fit her.
As a lady with broad shoulders, I frequently hulk out of different jackets and things like that, and it makes me very angry. You know, Ashley Hulk smash. Ashley Hulk smash Gap. But you know, I was like, yeah, girl, same.
Yeah, and also the idea that you know, you're going to go on a lot of bad dates where you're going to listen to a lot of men talk about themselves. I thought that was quite realistic. And then, you know, that sort of feeling that, you know, when she finally does have a successful date, it's the guy wants to date She-Hulk, not really Jen. And I think that's kind of a good sort of, you know, analogy for, or metaphor, I guess you could say, for, you know, women not really being appreciated for who they are, and more, what's mm-hmm. more about how they appear, or people's ideas of them, beauty standards, dating. I think also the fact that she is like unrealistic beauty standards. I think the fact that she is she's harassed. Arrested. Mm-hmm. She's harassed. Probably will be arrested before the show is out. But she's harassed, you know, by that guy when she's working with her coworker at the table in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that this guy's going to come up and bother these two women who are perfectly happy in their own company. Mm-hmm. They don't need the company of a man right at that moment. But mm-hmm. how could they possibly be, you know, okay sitting there? They need to be bought a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite clear, like, he's like, you know, you ladies sitting alone. It's like, well, there's two of us, so we're not actually alone by mm-hmm. definition. Like, can you please go away? I thought that was quite realistic. And then other stuff as well, like in the first, I think it's the first episode, she talks about controlling her anger and controlling her emotions, and how that's something that a lot of women have to do in the workplace, in the world, because the world is not designed for women. It's not to say that it hasn't got better and there aren't more things that are there for women, but we still live in a world which is very much designed and made and geared towards men, and mm-hmm. women have to navigate that on a daily basis. And it's not always, you know, advantageous for them. It's not always safe. It's not always comfortable. And so I feel like She-Hulk addresses that. Like, don't we all wish that walking home in the dark, we could just
do that by ourselves. Yeah. And
we could just become a bigger, stronger version of ourselves.
Right.
And defend ourselves if somebody, you know, threatens us or hurts us. And also, don't you also wish that, like, you know, if you are going, I mean, I've been married for about 10 years, so my dating days are over.
Same.
But I do remember what it was like to date people, especially people I didn't know particularly well, obviously, right at the beginning. And don't you wish you could just kind of put on a more comfortable skin? You could just boost yourself up into a more attractive version of yourself, just to feel more confident. Right. And I think that's all stuff that women feel today. And the show shows that.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, and discussing this with a friend, I found that, you know, I told him, I was like, listen, anger is like, I think it's unfair because there is a double standard with men too. Like, the only emotions that you guys are really allowed to express are anger. Men are allowed to be angry. Women are not. And you guys are, you know, I was talking to a guy friend, to be clear. So you're allowed to express joy over like winning a football game or some sort of competition or whatever. And then, you know, you're allowed to be mad about stuff in the political arena. If women are, you know, express anger, we are, you know, we're told we're being too emotional, about, you know, anything, or if we express, sadness or discomfort with something, you know, we need to be less sensitive. So, you know, there is this wild double standard for both men and women that of the range of emotions we're allowed to feel. And we're human. We feel all of those emotions. So, you know, it's interesting to see how the show is highlighting these kinds of issues. So I've really enjoyed that about it. So let's zero in a little bit on the episode at hand, Jen Walters versus Donnie Blaze. I did some searching. I thought it was funny that the guy's name was Donnie Blaze when we have a Ghost Rider whose name is Johnny Blaze. But to the best of my knowledge and Google searching, I could not find a reference to a Donnie Blaze in the comics. So this guy is an invention of the show. So what did you think about his magic act, if you want to call it that?
So first of all, I love the idea that there is a, like, what do they call him? He's like the student.
Oh, yes. At
Student of the Mystic Arts.
Right, right, right.
I love the fact that there's a failed student of the Mystic Arts. That, like, it's that idea that there's that sort of idea in a lot of fantasy and sci-fi that magic powers comes to people who are worthy. You know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, like, I mean, I guess Star Wars is an example of that. You know, this elite family that have this like magic force running through them, although they obviously don't always use it for good and kind of go down dark paths. But I love the idea in the Marvel universe that not all of these superheroes are super. Do you know that sometimes the magic powers are found in people who are lazy or make stupid decisions, have bad judgment, or are doing it for financial gain? You know, they aren't using their powers for some moral good. And in the Marvel universe, I guess you could argue that a lot of the sort of superhero stuff, with the exception of people like Thor and like Loki and people like that, a lot of the superhero stuff is actually everyday people who accidentally find themselves having superpowers. I mean, or they find themselves in a situation where they've been exposed to something, which means they have superpowers, or they've been given them through some sort of experimentation.
Right.
I mean, obviously, there's like, you know, Iron Man is a millionaire or billionaire or whatever, and he's a genius and everything. But, you know, there are some people in the Marvel Universe who are just everyday people. And I feel like Donnie Blaze is that. Like, he's obviously got some level of magical ability because he was a student of Mystic Arts. But he's just not a very clever man.
I mean, what was it that Wong said on his, like, first week in school? Like, he used the Mystic Arts to summon two kegs
a frat boy.
Yeah,
like, so, his frat college or something.
So basically, he's a guy who partied too hard and got kicked out of school.
Yeah,
this is effectively what it is. But, you know, it's the Mystic Arts version of that. I was like,
yeah, it's a magical school.
You don't think about that kind of thing. Like, I mean, nobody got kicked out of Hogwarts that we knew of. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
why would you want to do anything that would get you kicked out of Hogwarts? That's so bad.
I mean, I can see a little bit how, like, being a student at the Mystics Arts might be a little bit boring at times. It does seem like it's a lot of, I don't know if they're all male. I thought they were all male.
Anyway, no, they're not.
They're not. Okay. It does seem a little bit like a monastery where you have to have these clean thoughts and you have to, I mean, I could see how you could get bored and be like, screw this, I'm gonna magic up some beer in my old friend. And so I could kind of see like how you probably would end up in trouble at some point. But and you know, Wong isn't without his vices, as we see it, or not vices, but he's not without his entertainments, as we see episode.
Wong's in there binging Netflix, so yeah,
exactly. He's not always like meditating and achieving a higher plane of existence. So I thought that was a great detail. I think his magic, because you do think it's a bit of a clever beginning, because it sort of is a fake beginning in the sense that, like, you see him doing a lot of magic that obviously is fake magic, and so you think, oh, this is just some cheap politics. You think this is like a sort of budget low rate magician, but then when he pulls out that little
sling ring,
yeah, and he actually magics a portal, you're like, oh no, this guy actually can do magic.
I was like, where'd he get that?
Yeah, like, and then obviously with Madison, I'm sure we should probably talk more about Madison, but Madison coming up, her little ew, she looks through the portal at this other world beyond the portal is very funny.
To be fair, I totally agree. That did look pretty ew. Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought it was very funny. I think one of my favorite moments is when he's like, I'm levitating, or he's like the art of levitation. Mm-hmm. And then he sort of detaches like a pulley system from his back. He's been hung obviously by a rope.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You like you said, you just don't think about that sort of thing happening. It's pretty wild. Did he work for you as like a kind of like a guy who's kind of a thorn in Wong's side, or what did you think about that?
I mean, he's not really a villain, is he? He's a relatively mild annoyance. So
yeah, yeah.
I didn't feel like there was an actual, I mean, I guess the problems, which is more like pest control with the little flying demon baby things that happened later in the episode. So there's no real villain in this episode, you know, which I guess, you know, in Marvel, maybe you kind of do need
I mean, that's a little unusual for, you know, this is very much like a slice of life in a superhuman lawyer sort of thing. And honestly, yeah, that's a lot of like She-Hulk comics. Like, here's this cray cray bananas thing that happened, but it's not too bad. It's not somebody being evil, it's just somebody being an idiot.
I sort of feel like a lot of I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I sort of feel like a lot of crimes in real life are kind of like that. Like, obviously, you know, we're not that we're trying to condone criminal acts or criminal behavior, but, you know, a fair amount of crimes probably are people being stupid or making mistakes or doing something because they're desperate rather than like true outright evil, you know? And I think that this is a good medium for She-Hulk. Like, you do sort of feel like it could go on for an entire series. They could just do endless episodes of her, like each episode's a case where she has another supernatural person to sort of deal with or defend, or, and it's like a mine of possibilities, you know, just you could just dig deeper and deeper and deeper and find endless stories, because there must be so many magical superhero characters in Marvel that you could exploit
right
for a She-Hulk episode. You know, I think he works as maybe as a thorn in Wong's side, but he's not threatening. We don't feel that he's threatening. So I never felt there was a massive, huge threat. I guess the threat comes from the universes being connected and the multiverse. And I felt like really Wong was just annoyed because he kind of didn't want Donnie spoiling his television shows.
I mean, I felt like, you know, I watched the episode again just a little bit ago before we started recording. And when Madison lands in Wong's living room, he's like, Donnie Blaze. Like, but it seemed like him getting the Sopranos spoiled for him was kind of the last straw. Like, because obviously this is not the first time he's landed some unsuspecting audience member in Wong's living room. Because I mean, he's like, did some cut rate magician send you here? Also, just to be perfectly honest, I am a little surprised they don't confiscate sling rings once somebody's kicked out of Kamatage. Is that what it's called? Kamatage?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's right. I'm correctly out of that again. But, you know, I'm a little surprised they don't, Kamatage, yeah. Don't take those back. Like, I feel like that's a school property, and if you don't graduate from Mystic Arts School, you shouldn't be allowed to have one.
No, I think it's true. It's true. It's like, it's like giving somebody a weapon that they haven't been trained how to use, right?
Right, right.
Like, why would you? I also think that one of the great elements of this episode is one of the great scenes. I feel is Wong settling down to watch The Sopranos,
right?
And like dancing to the theme tune. Which is a great theme tune. It's one of the best television theme tunes.
Is that what I've never actually watched The Sopranos. Okay. So that's the theme tune. That's a bop.
Yeah. So, well, I'll say something about people who've never watched The Sopranos before, because
okay.
I feel like Madison, mm-hmm. I feel ruins The Sopranos for anyone who hasn't seen. She's not.
I don't know who any of those people are, but sure.
Yeah. The actual writers of this episode may have accidentally ruined The Sopranos for people who haven't seen it. So Madison isn't just ruining it for Wong. She's ruining it for any viewer who's not watched till the end of the series. Because there's two massive spoilers that she talks about, like, that really, I think they come in the last season or something. And you have to watch, like, 6 or 7 years of television. Not years, but 6 or 7 seasons of television to get to them. So it's quite a big deal. So this theme tune is by a band called Alabama 3, and it's a really great song. I mean, they wrote the song and they sang the song before it became the theme to Sopranos.
Okay.
And then when it became the theme to Sopranos, obviously the Sopranos commissioned to have it as their theme. It became a really big hit and at the time, and, you know, it was like on the radio and everything. And interestingly, I saw them play at a folk festival many years ago. I think it was in 2014. I might have seen them play in a folk festival. And they were a little bit too rocky for a folk festival, you know, because they are basically like a rock band. And I do remember that they played this song and the crowd was just silent, apart from me and my husband, my husband's a Sopranos fan, mm-hmm. was like bouncing around at the front of the crowd, because we're the only people that recognized it at the time. But yeah, it's a good song. And so it's good to see him, you know, like, jiggle a little bit as he sits down to get ready to watch his episode. But yeah, these are big spoilers. These are big spoilers. So if anyone's watching She-Hulk and hasn't watched The Sopranos, Madison spoiled it for them too.
Yeah.
Well, that was funny.
And to be totally fair, I remember seeing The Sopranos on VHS. So Sopranos is premiered in 1999. I just looked it up. So I mean, we are now what, 20 years past its premiere date, 20 plus years past its premiere
Yeah,
date.
I guess people are
but
you know,
it
should have
was
seen it by
really,
now.
it truly though, it was one of those first really, really popular serialized shows. So I can understand it still being like a, oh crap, you really just spoiled that. That sucks. So I get it. I get it. But yeah, it
It's
ended in
funny that like Wong hasn't
2007.
seen it.
So yeah, no,
He's
yeah.
been busy doing magic and being the Sorcerer Supreme. He hasn't had time to watch The Sopranos,
Yeah.
and now he has time. He's about to sit down. He's got his little snack. He's ready to go.
Ready to
And
go.
in Modison Pap pops, and she just
drinking
ruins
his,
it.
yeah, drinking his, you know, gin and tonic or whatever. And man gets the Sopranos ruined for him. Poor Wong. Poor Wong.
But I do like how I feel like that Madison and Wong are now going to have like a friendship.
It's like, is this, it sounds like this is not going to be the last we've seen
No.
of her. Which I think is just amusing on a bunch of different levels. And that's how Wongers and I became BFF. Like, Wongers? That's funny. Yeah, very fun. Very fun. I love the idea that Wong and Jin here are speaking like almost two completely different languages. Like, did you have him sign an NDA, a non-compete? He's like, what? No. She's like, well, if we do this by the book, we should be, it should be pretty by the book. He's like, ah, yes, the Book of Ashanti. Like, no.
She's like, no, the Book of American Law. The Book of American Laws. Like, the way she says it is so funny. And the fact that she's also a Hulk when she's saying all of this as well, which
right.
is quite amusing.
Right, right. Yeah. So it's funny to me that he goes to Jin for help while also in some ways kind of functioning outside of the legal system. But, you know, I guess this is how he's got to do business because he doesn't really see another way to stop Donnie Blaze.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to that idea that, like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, like I keep saying it. But, like, you know, like the idea that you have been given this power, or you have the magical ability and you've been given the sort of tools in which to use the magical ability in some certain way. You've been given the power of spells, all that sort of stuff, so that you're supposed to just use it responsibly, right? So you don't need to sign an NDA or you don't need to sign a contract because, you know, you've been bestowed this destiny and you're going to be honorable with it.
Right.
And obviously that's not the case. And actually that's kind of proved not the case in a lot of the Marvel stories, that people with these like powers or these, I guess, legacies or destinies or whatever, kind of choose to do whatever they want with them.
You know, right, like, right. Not everybody is going to act with integrity at all times. And this guy isn't necessarily even doing anything that's totally immoral, but it's definitely a bad idea. Like, you know, you could, you know, seriously hurt somebody, or, you know, I mean, because clearly Madison has made a pact with a goat and who's a demon named Jake. And like, what? Oh, and then dude's like, oh, I know Jake. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, okay, this is I'm going to backpedal a little bit. Yeah, this is probably a bad idea, and it might be a little on the immoral side too.
But I think Donnie Blaze himself he's not trying to hurt anyone, is he?
He's just trying to make a buck.
Yeah, and also maybe get some prestige and get some, I don't know, attention. But like, it's quite clear that he doesn't actually want to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that he just doesn't know really quite what he's doing with the magic. And he does make this point as well when Wong and Jen go to see him and they serve him with this cease and desist, right? Desist and cease, cease and desist order, legal order. And they sort of say, you know, you need to stop practicing magic. And sort of the argument Donnie has is like, well, you don't own magic. Like, you don't. You know, like, magic isn't something.
You can't copyright it.
Yeah, you can't copyright magic. And I think there's kind of a point there. I think Donnie kind of has a point there. Like, but also at the same time, you're asking somebody who has an ability to use it in a responsible way. And I mean, I guess, is there a situation where you could liken that to the real world, where somebody has the ability to do something, they have a natural ability to do something, but you want them to use it in a responsible way. Like, I don't know, trying to think of an example. Like, you are very physically, I don't know, you have a physical ability, like you're very good at boxing or something. You know, you want mm-hmm. boxers to then use their boxing skills in the boxing ring, as opposed to hitting somebody on the street.
Right.
Do you know, I'm trying to think of an example of how this would fit in the real world, but you can't, like, can you copyright boxing? You can't, do you know, I mean, could you copyright, could you, like, I don't know, that's probably a really bad example, but I'm just sort of thinking, like, the magic itself can't be copyrighted. You can't trademark right. magic. But what I think Wong is trying to do is get him to stop using his ability, because he's obviously doing it in a foolhardy, dangerous way, or to use his ability in a responsible way.
Right. Or, yeah. Well, and, you know, he does mention, like, you could basically mess up a whole bunch of, you know, you could mess up the universe by doing this. Like, this is clearly a very terrible idea. And I think maybe to go with the metaphor that you were working with there, in the US, there is quite a bit of issue with players in the NFL who then go and commit domestic violence of various varieties. And there's some question, you know, to the NFL, like, you know, on the field, you're encouraged to hit as hard as you can. You're encouraged to, you know, take down the person in front of you. And I would imagine that that is a very cathartic kind of thing. As someone who is not particularly gifted in athleticism, I have played a little bit of flag football, and I can tell you it was very exciting to grab somebody else's flag. Because I mean, that, you know, that meant I did it, even though I wasn't physically, like, taking someone to the ground. Like, it was really enjoyable to have that happen. I've also done things like axe throwing and shot paintball guns, like, and it was really, like, exciting to do that, but it was also really cathartic. Like, just felt like I was, you know, releasing some rage or whatever when I was doing that. And if you haven't, you know, if basically you're channeling all your rage into, like, that tackle, but you're not healthily handling, you know, your anger in off the field, then that's a problem. So why aren't these players getting counsel? Like, you know, or why are they unable to separate the two? Like, you know, there's problems there. So yeah, it might be really great for you to plow some guy into the ground, so your you know, quarterback can get off that throw or hand off that pass. But if you are doing that to your girlfriend or your wife or whoever, that's really bad, and you should not do that. That's the wrong way to use that strength. So here we've got Donnie Blaze, just you know, using that ability that he does have incorrectly, and yeah. and while it's played off with some comedic effect, you know, it does have the potential to get really, really bad. And, you know, we see a little bit of that when we've got all these demons coming through a fire hole.
I think also we know it could be really bad, because by this point I'd imagine most people who've seen this TV show have also seen the most recent Spider-Man movie, or actually the most, yeah, you're right, the most recent
Multiverse
Doctor Strange
Madness.
Movie.
Yeah.
So do you have full awareness that if you mess with portals and different universes, that you can be changing time, you can be changing other universes, which can affect your own universe, and that this could lead to a lot of very serious problems. There's messing with stuff that you shouldn't be messing with, you know, and maybe Dunny should find some other profession for a while. Or go back and train properly to be a master of whatever it's called. Master of the mystic arts. And, like, actually help Wong to maintain the safety, the security of the universe or whatever, or the fabric of the multiverse or whatever they do.
Right.
On a regular basis.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, otherwise you might end up with the multiverse of Madison. We don't need that. yeah, good thoughts here. And let me Let me backtrack a little bit. I realized I opened the episode and I said the incorrect title of the episode. I was looking at a blog post on Marvel.com and it said Jennifer Walters versus Donnie Blaze. And that's not the title of the episode. It's called Is This Not Real Magic or Isn't This Real Magic? Which I'm still getting it. Is This Not Real Magic is the actual name of the episode. I'm so sorry. Put that in my corrections and apologies segment in the monthly news roundup that Hugh and I do. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit. We've talked a lot about Donnie Blaze. Let's shift a little bit to the B plot in this episode. How do we? Because you mentioned that you've been married for about 10 years. I've been married for 11 years. So, online dating, or at least in the age of swipe left, swipe right, that was not a thing when my husband and I started dating. So I kind of missed out on that. And actually, I'm really, really grateful that I did. This sounds really stressful, but my friends that I know who have been, using the dating apps or whatever, it seems to be a thing where it can be pretty stressful, and you're dealing with a lot of surface level people or people who are just looking for a hookup, not like an actual like relationship. So I don't know, like in your estimation, do you feel like this is kind of a fair understanding or of that experience?
Yeah, so I did a bit of internet dating before I met my husband, but yes, it was nothing. There were no apps for this at the time. There was no swiping left or swiping right. It was all like you put a profile on a website, and then you respond. You had like a you message, email each other. It was very clunky and old fashioned. Obviously, it felt quite modern at the time compared to like I don't know, going to dance halls or bars to meet people or whatever, which people still do, and they were doing then as well. I have, like Nikki in the episode, I have like looked at the app for my friends before. I've sat next to my friends while they've been busy eating or drinking or something, and I've been like, "Do you want me to just swipe for you? I'll just do it, like by like while vicariously, like basically digitally date through you, if that's okay." But I'm
Going to
like,
date vicariously.
I was long-term married, so I know I wasn't gonna be doing that myself. But I mean, we've had many situations where she has, I know I shouldn't say this, but she has screenshotted a photo of one of the people's profiles and sent it to us. And there are some really funny, hilarious things that people put on these dating apps, sometimes really pretentious pictures. There's always a picture with a guy with a dog, and if the guy with a, or a picture of a guy with a child, or a guy, standing next to a boat, or I mean, like really, or guy skiing, just like standard stupid stuff. And some of them are actually just like genuinely funny because the people themselves are making fun of themselves and a little more, just a little bit more like, I would like to meet somebody and I'm just going to try and treat this in a more jolly way. Whereas some of them are genuinely trying to impress people and they just come across as silly. And a few times I have known people who have actually met people on these apps. One of my friends is married to a guy that she met on Bumble, and they're really well suited and it went really well. Wasn't the first person that she dated from Bumble. Obviously it took some time to find him. But I think part of the problem with the dating apps is that it's all based on algorithms as well, right? So how much of a match you are with somebody, you answer a few questions or sometimes loads of questions, and it gets fed through an algorithm, which then comes up with a percentage of how matched you are. And if you think about it, I mean, I'm pretty sure I would never be matched with my husband on an app, just because I don't think that we would. I don't think the algorithm would put us together. Do you know what I mean? I just don't think it's. There's a lot of things that are very different about each other, and there's lots of things that I enjoy that he doesn't, and same for me and him. And so there's a false element to it, and I think that there's a pressure as well to have the date be really successful, the pressure to find someone you immediately click with, that you immediately are attracted to, because you've already been convinced by the app that you match because of this algorithm. There's kind of this fake matching. And there's also people on the app that you could get on with really well that you're not matched to because the algorithm doesn't say that you're compatible. And my friends who've done a lot of internet dating, a lot of app internet dating, I feel, and in a little way, in the case of Jen, I mean, Jen's gone through some seriously bad dates in this episode, right? So it's not maybe the case with Jen, but that this, it's almost like they immediately expect to be physically attracted to the person immediately. Like when they walk through the door and they sit down, that's boom, it has to be like sparks. And I don't know if that's always how romance works. You know, right. I mean, sometimes you're really attracted to the person immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you get to know them and you get to become friends with them. And like the more you get to know them, the more handsome or the more beautiful they look to you. And the more, like, I mean, obviously, you find somebody immediately repellent, it's not going to work, right?
Right, right.
But it's not always like, I want to, you know, have sex with you right now. Sometimes it's like, I think you're nice, but I'm not sure how attractive I find you. Mm. And then the more you get to know the person, the more it's their personality that makes them attractive. And the more you start to actually care about them, want to be with them, fall in love with them. And I think that this episode kind of highlights that, because people aren't, the men are not finding Jen immediately attractive. You know, they're looking for this immediately gorgeous woman that they can, like, you know, I don't know, bone or whatever, that they can immediately feel attractive to. And we all know Jen is lovely, right? We've seen episodes of her be Jen. We know she's a good person. We know she cares about her family. We know that she cares about doing a good job. We know she cares about the law. And we also know that she's got a sense of justice. She's got a really good sense of humor. She's a good friend. Jen should be fine as she is to be dated, right?
Right.
But she has to be sexy too immediately to attract people. So when she becomes the Hulk, that sort of taps into this very shallow, like, physical appearance aspect of digital dating, which is that you have to be attractive, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you're not even going to get your foot in the door. And I just don't think love or relationships work that way, ultimately, no. Long term.
Not long term.
It's shown, like, the guy sleeps with her, but then as soon as he sees the real her, you know.
Yeah.
I guess it's a metaphor for a woman who's heavily dressed and made up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Finds her really sexy, sleeps with her, and then the next morning gets a glimpse of what she looks like without her makeup on, mm-hmm. without her fancy dress, and she just looks like herself in her pajamas. And the guy's like, "Oh, I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look as sexy now." It's like, "Well, screw you, man. Are you always sexy all the time?
Right.
I mean, sometimes people are just people, you know." And then he leaves, and I thought that was a really good part of the episode, was that the guy likes the She-Hulk, you know, sexy, strong woman,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a bit of a novelty. But doesn't want the regular Jen, and I think that's kind of sad.
Well, I'm looking through the IMDb cast list. The guy who played Alan, the long haired guy, she goes to the bar with on the first, like,
oh my god,
match or date, and you know, as
he was terrible,
he was so bad. And then as you know, he's walking away, he answers the phone. He's like, "Yeah, she was like a six," and I'm like, I'm sorry. What? Like, one, you're going to say that in earshot. And I mean, I feel like beauty to a certain degree is subjective, but like, by all standards, Tatiana Maslany is a beautiful woman and she's decidedly not a six. So
also don't give people a number.
Right. Come on. Like, it's not appropriate.
Don't rate people in a numerical way. Like,
it's
screw you.
Not appropriate. It's not appropriate. But like, she is a conventionally attractive woman and you're like, six. I'm like, dude, just go away.
I also didn't like it because he made her pay.
Yeah. Rude.
Which isn't to say that she can't pay.
No.
But it isn't to say that he should pay. But it's like, I think she thought they were going to split the bill.
Right.
Which would be fair.
Right.
And the fact that, I love my favorite moment when he's like, "We should do this again." And she's like, "That's an idea. Like, we're never doing this again." But also, his whole thing about being a New Yorker, because he's been to New York for, what was it, like?
He's like, 14... I lived there for 14 months.
Yeah, 14 months. He's like, "I'm a New Yorker." She's like, "No, you're not."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think there were a lot of really unlikable things about it, but definitely he wasn't showing her any respect, even just on a like friendly level.
No,
like, he didn't listen to her. He looked at his phone while she was talking. Also, he checked out other women while he was sitting there with her.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's a big no-no. A lot of red flags.
Yeah.
On that
date. So many. Yeah. No, that was decidedly bad. But yeah, I appreciate what that whole B plot did. Aside from these guys are clearly like garbage on different levels and in different ways. What I really liked about that B plot is it highlights this is a real issue that a lot of people online dating is the pressure, one, like what you said, for the date to be successful, but two, like, the algorithm says that this should work. So this should work. We should match here. But it also encourages like a level of dishonesty, perhaps, or it doesn't feel genuine. It feels disingenuous. And, if you're looking for a hookup, I suppose that's okay. Or I suppose it doesn't really matter. But if you're there for, a real relationship or something long term, then that might not be the place for you.
I think it also encourages people to look for a perfect match, an ideal. The friends that I know have done internet dating. I mean, some have been very successful. Some have married to people they met online. Some people dated people for years they met online, and though they may not be with them now, they were very successful relationships at the time. But a few of my friends, I think, have, and I don't, think these women are, always to blame or anything. I mean, these are dear friends of mine who I don't think ill of. I don't think they're doing anything wrong, but I think that the apps and the websites, the algorithms and everything, and just the sort of categories that people are placed under. Does this person have this political view? Does this person like reading? Do they like doing this on the weekend? So it's almost a little bit like you have too much information about the person before you meet them, and so your expectations are kind of at a certain level. So you're looking for a perfect partner. So I've had friends which have been like, well, he's this, this, and this, and this, but he doesn't do this, or he's, perfect in all these respects, except that he has this really bad job, or he has this, whatever. And I think to myself, actually, the person out there who could be right for you could be doing a job that you've never even like. It's, I don't know how to put it. Like, maybe the person that's right for you is somebody that you don't even realize is right for you, or you don't even think is right for you. And ultimately, who the person is, like, what they like and what they don't like kind of isn't as important as how they treat you.
Exactly.
And that's the most important part. Like,
That is the thing that you cannot put in an algorithm, and that's the thing that screws up every single one of these matches, quote
I mean,
unquote.
obviously, if they're massive, I don't know, right-wing political fans, and they, I mean, sometimes what they like or their political views can be so much against yours. Like, I'm thinking of, like, I don't know, a Democrat marrying a staunch Republican. I don't know how that works. Maybe they just don't talk about politics. But
I mean, I know situations where that occurs, but like,
just agree to disagree. I don't know.
I
But
don't
like,
know. But
did you know what I mean? I mean, maybe in that situation, things would be, you might want to know that sort of stuff. But ultimately, you can fall in love with someone who has completely different interests than you and is actually very different than you if they treat you well and they love you for who you are. And I don't, you're right, the apps don't address that. They don't address any of that. It's all about, like, this person likes to read and you like to read. You're a 90% match. It's like,
Yeah,
no.
there's
That's
not a, I mean,
no.
because nobody thinks they're a douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, there's not a metric to measure, are you a jerk or not? There, it's that's the thing that you run into. But I thought that it's a good commentary for how this stuff can go. And I mean, doesn't always have to go that way, but it is a good commentary on, the whole, Jen is Jen, but she's also She-Hulk, and you can't separate the two. Like, you can't be in this just to date She-Hulk. You have to be in this for Jen too. And so I think that's just, it's just really interesting, and it's something that the comic deals with a lot too. In particular, the Dan Slott Peter David run deals a lot with that. And so anyway, I thought that was good. I thought it was good.
I do think also as well that there's a real key thing here for any man who watches She-Hulk, and actually almost any a man who watches almost any romantic comedy where they show women dating one like person after another and not being happy. Just look for this one key thing, which is in all of these scenarios, in most cases, the man is talking and not listening to the woman. And as soon as the woman meets a man who's like, so tell me about yourself, or actually asks her questions and listens to her, the woman is like, oh my God, I'm totally gonna sleep with this guy. The guy is out there, like, you want to quick a quick you know, like quick tip about how to win a woman's heart, it's basically don't talk about yourself all the time, and listen to what she has to, like, really listen to what she has to say, because they go through all these different guys in the episode, don't they? And the first guy who's like actually shows some interest in her, she's like, oh, I mean, obviously he's not,
we're gonna get those fries to go.
he's not right, because obviously he doesn't want Jen, he just wants She-Hulk, but
right,
he does stop and sort of listen to her and ask her how she feels about things,
right?
And that's the first guy that's asked her something, right?
Yeah, out of all of them. Yeah, like he's the only one that like inquired about her.
It's a very simple thing to do. It's a win-win situation if you show some interest in the woman rather than just talking about yourself.
Yep. Yeah, that's funny. Cool. Well, let's chat a little bit about production. Like, you know, how do you, like, I'm a big music person. I really, really liked the score for this episode. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that, or are there any other like production things that you thought were particularly interesting?
Yeah, so I do like the music. It's not too intrusive, but actually it is kind of fun, you know, when you do hear it. And they have been using like popular music, you know, as part of the credits as well, which I thought were quite to pick me up. It's kind of a nice thing at the end of an episode. I think the acting is great. I mean, I know it's not production, but I guess
yeah.
It's kind of
no, it's good. Like,
I mean, the acting is just off the charts. I think that. So, what's the main actress's name again?
Tatiana Maslany.
I'm terrible with people's names.
Oh, good.
I never forget a face, but I'm terrible with people's names. I think Tatiana is just an amazing actress. Like,
I do too.
Just her facial expressions. I mean, I've always thought she was good from like since Orphan Black.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with this, she's just. And you can see when she's Hulk, like they used her facial expressions when they were, I guess, computer generating Hulk, She-Hulk. So it's very well done. They match up really well, I think. And I just think she's got great comic timing. I think the acting, her father is really great, really good actor. Very
yeah,
funny.
Yeah. Mark Lynn Baker, who has been a TV dad since the 80s. So I think that's great that they've cast him. It took me a second to recognize him because I'd never seen him with a mustache before, but I'm like, what?
It's like, it's the dad. It's the TV dad.
Yeah.
I think everyone does a great job. I think that the costumes are really good. I like the fact that Wong is always dressed in these, you know, Sorcerer Supreme robes.
Mm-hmm.
But I love like Nikki's costumes, the Nikki's outrageous outfits.
Yeah.
They kind of the costumes kind of fit the characters. Do you know what I mean? They fit the personalities of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Madison in
right.
very skimpy dresses. I think it's good. I think the special effects are quite good. I mean, I have seen some criticism online of the special effects. Like they're saying that Marvel is getting quite sloppy with their special effects, but I don't think I look at this stuff as closely as maybe other people. I think I'm paying more attention to the script and the story.
Right.
So for me, I just accept it. You know, if it's something is really jarring, like if they were standing in front of a green screen, I might notice.
Right.
But I think it's quite good. I thought, you know, like in the first episode when they're on the island together or the out of the beach, I thought her and Hulk. I thought I just saw them as people on the beach, you know.
Right, I did
big
too.
Big and green. I didn't see it as computer generated, if that makes
right.
sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, that was my thought as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I especially like the credits being, and they've kind of done this a little bit with Miss Marvel, haven't they? With the sort of linking back to the actual original source material in the actual show through the use of graphics, the use of like, art, to the use of like bright colors. And I think with She-Hulk, it's the credits, the sort of written, not written, sketched out drawings in the credits are really great. I always love it when they incorporate art with the actual visual TV as well.
Yeah, I was watching the episode again this afternoon with my husband, and he pointed out that, this is, you know what, those are kind of like courtroom sketches. I was like, yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is. I was looking up the composer for the score because I'm nerdy about movie and TV scores. But the composer is Amy Dougherty. And she's been working in music for TV and film since early 2000s. But she's composed music for a lot of short films and documentaries, and things like that. But it's been in the past couple of years that she's done music for TV. She did the score for a TV show called Undone, which I have not seen. Have you seen that?
No, I don't.
I'm not familiar
no, I don't
with
think
that.
So.
Mm-hmm. But she also does a lot of orchestration. So she's done like conducting and things like that. But I was excited to see that she is the orchestrator for Star Trek Discovery, which I love.
Oh,
so I'm like, oh,
that's
great.
Cool. I have to say, I think Marvel, the last few TV shows, has used, I think, haven't they used a female composer?
I believe that is correct. But I know I'm blanking on her name, but I believe the composer for the Ms. Marvel TV series is female.
And for Loki as well, I think, as a
female
composer. Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's actually kind of good as well, because like almost every sector in the world, composing, you know, was, I guess, until quite recently, very male dominated. So it's nice to see that like women composers are getting more film scores and more TV series, you know, scores. Mm-hmm. And and also I think it's, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, getting more sort of diverse talent in the room to produce a good product.
Yeah. Well, and I was noticing too, the musical cues in this episode are a little different than what we've heard before. It was definitely more edgy rock guitar driven. As a guitarist and a drummer, I really enjoy that kind of thing. But it reminded me quite a bit. I was listening over the weekend to some John Carpenter scores, and it really reminded me, I want to say, of Out of the Mouth or Into the Mouth of Madness or whatever, or Out of the Mouth of Madness. He did this, you know, he directed that film and then did the score, as he does with most of his work. But, you know, had that same kind of edgy guitar and drums and things like that. And I really enjoyed that. You know, he's my favorite director. Definitely one of my favorite composers as well. And I felt like we got some John Carpenter nods in that. And so that made me really happy. But I feel like the music worked really well for this episode, because you've got a guy who's trying to be like edgy or whatever. And so, yeah, you know, edgy guitar music lead in. Yeah, of course, that's going to be the music for Donnie Blaze. so that worked for me. I really enjoyed that.
It's interesting how the different Marvel series, and I guess you could say the Marvel movies as well, mm-hmm. have their own kind of style choices, you know? So like, whether they hark back to a different time period, you know, whether they hark back to a different time period, like Captain Marvel, or whether they take on, you know, like different ethnic influences like Ms. Marvel, or with Loki, it's like this weird kind of 60s bureaucratic architecture. Do you know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. and sort of the sort of weird music and the different colors as well. So She-Hulk is like a, you know, the title card is like, it's green, but there's also purple in there. And the way it's written, it's almost kind of, you know, it's like the sort of typeface. When the guy said, oh, LA, I was like, of course they're in LA because of the typeface and the, you know, the sort of, it looks kind of tropical and, mm-hmm. But it's also a lawyer. So like you said, it's like the illustrations are like courtroom drawings, compared to, say, for instance, Hawkeye, which was very Christmassy in New York, and, mm-hmm. and the sort of the logo of Hawkeye, you know, is quite different than, say, for instance, the logo for Loki or Miss Marvel or Falcon Winter Soldier is very sort of militaristic, like, I don't know, type. Like, yeah. It's like they've really carefully thought about the branding of every single character.
Yeah.
And every single, and I guess a lot of that comes from its kind of comic graphic novel background, right? Which is all about the typeface you use, the art that you draw, the style that you draw it in, the colors you use and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And some of that is kind of drawn from how they've stylized the titles in the comics. This one draws a little bit from like that mid 2000s run, but it's still its own entity. It's not exactly the same. And so I definitely enjoyed that about it for sure. Very cool. Well, anything else you want to chat about with this episode?
So I have a little bit of an issue with Jen.
Okay.
Not Jen. Let me start again.
Go ahead.
I have an issue with Jen. I have a little bit of an issue with Jen addressing the audience.
Okay.
So,
Tell me what is your hang up with the fourth wall breaking?
So I don't have a problem with fourth wall breaking just as a concept. I really loved Fleabag, where the fourth wall breaking happens all the time. There's a TV series called Gentleman Jack, which is really big in the UK. The main character in Gentleman Jack breaks the wall, fourth wall, on occasion and speaks directly to the audience. And I thought it worked very well there. In this, I feel like it works a little less well, partly because there's so much like sort of self-conscious humor that's already existing in the TV series. And because partly because it's never really happened in Marvel before, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell.
At least not in the MCU.
Not in the MCU. Okay, yeah. So maybe it's mm-hmm. happened like, you know, in a comic or something.
Well, that is actually a signature of, it started in the Sensational She-Hulk comic book series, but it is now a signature thing for pretty much every She-Hulk series is that She-Hulk knows that she is in a comic and she addresses the audience.
Okay, so that's what it's talking about too. Because I sort of thought like, because having it be a TV series, I don't know, just for some reason, it doesn't seem to fit the rest of the MCU narrative universe to me. Mm-hmm. And I think every time she does it, it draws me out of the actual universe. I mean, and the universe itself is, I mean, narratively, this is crazy. Like it, you know, technically, I guess it's supposed to be our universe, right? But New York hasn't been attacked by aliens. The Avengers don't exist. There wasn't a blip, a 5-year blip or whatever. Thanos doesn't exist. You know, like we know it's all fictional, right? But it's supposed to sort of kind of exist in a universe. It's very similar to ours.
It could exist within our universe, right?
Yeah, exactly. So although it doesn't really make sense compared to, say, I don't know, like a docudrama that is like firmly rooted in our reality, it kind of makes some narrative sense because the way they've painted it and cleverly written it and everything is that like gods exist or magic exists and all that sort of stuff makes narrative sense. So you buy it. Mm-hmm. And a little bit like another example would be Star Trek, right?
Right.
Star Trek isn't real, but we buy it because they've written it so that like, you know, we buy that ships fly through space and everything. But if the Enterprise suddenly came across a giant, bright pink, huge killer bunny in space, that like, I don't know, bared its fangs and started like singing opera right there in space in front of the Enterprise, we'd suddenly be jolted out of it because no one in the Star Trek Enterprise Star Trek series or franchise has ever talked about bunnies in space, right? Now, if they introduced it slowly into the narrative and they're like, well, there's this alien that looks like a giant bunny that lives in the space, then yeah, we'd probably buy it, right? Mm-hmm. So as soon as you have something that jolts you out of the narrative universe, then you're like, what? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And never in the MCU have they sort of implied that you might be watching a TV series.
Yeah.
They're acting like they're really living that world. And so for Jen to turn around and be like, Wong is a character, isn't it great? Wong's back, mm-hmm. you know?
That's some Twitter armor for the week. So.
Yeah, and it's funny that she says that because it's kind of true, right?
Yeah.
With all the people who are, I guess, sexist, misogynistic mm-hmm. fans of MCU who don't like seeing a woman be a main character or whatever. Mm-hmm. But on Twitter, you know, the hate people spread on Twitter. But I was like, she thinks she's in a TV series? Like, it's just, I don't know, kind of.
Yeah. And so.
Jolted me out.
Yeah. No. And I think what you're saying makes sense. And you're right. We have never experienced anything like that in the MCU. And I guess my thing is, it's not necessarily that the whole MCU needs to be aware that it's a movie or a TV series or whatever. I think this is a particular situation where She-Hulk is a TV series because of the unique way in which she obtained her powers. You know, she didn't do it on purpose. It's not because she's a scientist and got exposed to some sort of like experiment gone wry. She's not, you know, one of the cosmic heroes like Thor. She's not a billionaire. She's just a regular person who happened to get into a car accident with her cousin, who's a Hulk. I wrote a piece on why how the changes they made for her origin story in the MCU versus her comics origins on Fangirlish. But I feel like the way they've approached that actually really works well for the series. And I could totally see this being like a media thing, like, oh my gosh, you know, Hulk's cousin was in an accident with him, and now she can turn big and green too. That needs to be documented. Let's make this into a reality show or whatever. And so I'm kind of viewing it through that lens. And I think based on what they do with her in the comics, where she's talking to the audience and stuff like that, that actually works really well and is a neat translation of a comics fixture to the world of the MCU. It you know, translates well to television for me. And so I'm not personally bothered by that in the slightest. And I think it's a lot of fun. So I'm not personally bothered by that, but I see your point. I see why that could be, it could be distracting too. So.
In a little bit in a way of how, like, it's like meta within meta within meta kind of, because, you know, in Miss Marvel, they go to like a convention, which is the kind of convention that would exist in our world right now, right? We would have Avengers, MCU, Marvel, Comic-Con or whatever conventions, but conventions also exist in the MCU world.
Right.
But the heroes are actually real people. And so it's like a commentary on something that's happening in the world. It's a commentary in the world that's on something that's happening in the world. It's very meta. And in a similar way, Hawkeye, like when he goes, I can't remember the main female character's name, but like they're walking through Times Square in Central.
Oh yeah, Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop, yeah, in Central New York, and they see. I mean, it's actually not him; it's Katniss Everdeen or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's like, well, Katniss Everdeen. So it's like,
well, and that's funny on a completely different level because Hayley Steinfeld was in the running to play Katniss Everdeen in the Hunger Games. So I think she got the better part. You know, ended up being in the MCU versus the Hunger Games series. But it
implies that the Hunger Games is an actual thing in the MCU universe, which is like, so they have all the same books that we do. They have the same TV shows, same films, and then also it's like our cultural references in a completely different universe, as well as they're referencing their own culture too. It's like a kind of like a box within a box within a box within a box kind of concept, you know?
Well, and we do have a multiverse. That's just Multiverse 616.
Yeah, exactly. 616. So that's the thing. It's like, it's not like it doesn't make any sense. It's not like, I mean, and also if it's part of the comics, I can see why they did it, because one of the things that they've done really well with these Marvel TV series is paying respects to the origins of these stories.
Right.
I really feel like Marvel wants the people who have read the comics and love the comics, who are fans of the comics, to feel like they are being appreciated for that, like that they are that this art is also being made for them. I mean, it's being made for everybody, I guess, but you know what I mean, like it's like we haven't forgotten the people who actually have been following She-Hulk all these years, or we haven't forgotten the people who have been, you know, reading the Miss Marvel comics, the people who know about the origins of Spider-Man or whatever, like we haven't forgotten that, and we're actually gonna pay homage to their origins, which I think is actually kind of good, really.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like they've done a really fantastic job just translating the spirit of the She-Hulk comic to the TV series. And to me, that's worked really, really well. So, but that's good commentary from somebody who has not read the comics to see how well. I think that's the benchmark for how well is a show doing, is like, can they do the silly thing of breaking the fourth wall, and is it going to work for somebody who's not read the comics? So I think that's a good commentary, Clara.
It's also nice as well when a woman breaks the fourth wall, because women have lots of thoughts and feelings, and they don't always express how they feel.
Yeah, no, it's true. I hadn't thought about it quite like that, but you're right. So, you're right.
And actually, to be honest, like the last few TV series I've watched where someone's broken the fourth wall, it's been a woman, and normally somebody says something and she kind of looks at the camera like, oh,
yeah. Was that really what they and just said? Yeah,
I'm thinking like, oh, I feel that sometimes when somebody opens their mouth and says something, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's interesting. That's interesting. Very good. All right. Well, one more thing I want to tack on before we wrap up our show today is Daredevil Watch. So I forgot to do Daredevil Watch last week. I am so sorry, Hugh. But my co-host Hugh McStay is a Daredevil fanboy. I feel like he feels about Daredevil almost as much as I feel about She-Hulk. So that's one of the things he's most excited for in this series. So this week's Daredevil Watch, no Daredevil. I'm sorry.
He's not appeared, but he's going to appear, right? Like, I think that's what everyone's waiting for.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you know, I was looking back through the cast list, and apparently, at minimum, now IMDb is not always right, but they did list him in the cast list in episode 2. So I haven't actually gone back through and paused, but if I had to guess, he's probably in the scene in Legalese, the apparent lawyer bar where they go hang out. So but I did not see him in episode 4 this week. I'm so sorry.
So the last time he appeared was in the Spider-Man movie, right?
Yes, in
Yeah.
No Way Home.
Yeah, so it's about time he had another cameo. I
It's
mean,
about time.
I'm in favor of him making a cameo, like Alfred Hitchcock in his films, making a
Right.
cameo, like the not it's not a cameo, but you know, like have you ever seen TV series Fringe,
Yeah,
where the
well, I've seen bits of French, yeah.
where the Observer, there's a character called the Observer who is like this sort of man in a dark suit and a hat. Who basically appears in every episode, and you have to look for seeing him. Somebody's in the
Oh,
background,
interesting.
somebody's in
Okay.
the front, but he's in every single episode. He's this kind of being that exists sort of outside time, and he can travel whenever, go throughout time, but or whatever period he wants to. And he just observes, and he's in every single episode. And sometimes it's like they're standing on the street, and the guy walks by, or he's standing in a doorway, or I just think they should put Daredevil every episode of
Every
MCU
episode.
and every film as well. Just have him in the background. Walking, shuffling through some papers, talking to somebody. It's like, hey, Daredevil watch. He's in everything. Just like a cameo.
Right. Yeah. And Daredevil, he's a good reconnaissance man. Easy to blend in. So, you know. But yeah, sorry, Hugh. No Daredevil this week. Maybe next week, bro.
Maybe next
Sorry.
week.
Very good, very good. Anything else that you want to comment on before we close up?
No, I think that's about it, really.
Okay.
I think we
Any
covered everything.
predictions for next week?
Oh, well, I keep thinking that there's going to be a big baddie that's going to come along.
Yeah.
And I think it probably won't be a one episode baddie. I feel like it would be a baddie that would cross over a few episodes, maybe two episodes.
Maybe.
But I feel like a big baddie is going to come because I think, although it's a funny show, I think I could be wrong, but I think they might inject a little bit of seriousness into it at some point.
Well, I mean,
And
Daredevil
hoping.
is showing up at some point, and he's definitely one of the more serious characters in the MCU, though he's got a bit of humor to him too. He definitely shows up in a fair amount of She-Hulk, so in the comics, so because you know they're lawyers and they cross paths, so
Oh, I love the fact that there's magical lawyers.
it's so great.
Superhero lawyers.
Well, one thing that we did not comment on is Jen got handed a suit right at the end of the episode from Titania World Enterprises for violation of copyright, which ironically is something that was discussed. Like you can't, copywriting magic or art or whatever. Apparently, Titania went behind her back, copyrighted the name She-Hulk, and is suing her for using the name She-Hulk. That's pretty cray cray.
I also think that's kind of a really funny idea as
It
well.
does. It does. Also, the fact that Titania is an influencer in this particular series, I was like, that's perfect. That is so perfect for that character, who's a little absurd anyway, in the comics. Like the fact that she's a social media influencer and that's her job, and so she gets to be absurd and it's literally her job. That's great.
I feel it also ties into this just running theme that exists in almost all the Marvel films and TV shows. Which is that Marvel heroes are both proud and embarrassed by their superhero names.
Yes.
Almost all of them are proud and also at the same time simultaneously embarrassed by their superhero
Right,
names.
right, right.
So it does tie into that as well.
Yeah, I think that's good. So I do hope that in the next episode we get to see some more of the fabulous Jameela Jamil as Titania because she's just delightful. She's so much fun.
I'm hoping she's not the big bad.
Oh, well, I guess she is kind of the big bad, but I mean, she's a more comical big bad, but that also works with how her character
Maybe
is in the comics.
they could join forces against an even bigger bad.
Well, and I feel like there's got to be a bigger big bad come up later in the series because Daredevil shows up and Daredevil fights guys like Kingpin. And we've already seen Kingpin in Hawkeye, and people have made speculation about how much of Kingpin and Hawkeye is the same guy that we see in the Daredevil Netflix series. So hard to say. But again, I if Jen and Daredevil get to take on Kingpin, heck yeah, I'm there for that. That's gonna be
Yeah,
that
I'd
is
watch
gonna be I'd
that.
watch that show all day, and I literally would. Would not be upset about it at all. So Awesome. Well, Clara, this has been an absolute treat. Thank you so much for talking with me this week. That's about all the time we've got for Podcast 616 this week. So all that remains is for me to thank Clara for joining me. Clara, if you could please tell our listeners where they can connect with you.
So you can find me online on Twitter at Clara Jean MC. I also run a podcast about women in television, film and fiction. And you can find that on most podcast providers, but it's called The Tales We Tell. And you can also find it on Twitter at The Tales Podcast.
Very good. Very good. Thank you so much. So as for Podcast 616, you can follow us on Twitter at Podcast 616 and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcast616. You can also join our Facebook group. It is Community 616. You can tune in to all of those places for regular updates, information, and teases about upcoming episodes. You can follow me on Twitter at The Nerdy Blogger, and you can follow my co-host Hugh McStay on Twitter at AngrySkotsman81. Don't forget to subscribe to your to our show on your podcast app of choice. And if you have time, please leave us a rating or review. It really helps to spread the word and increases our listenership. So we really appreciate it if you did that. Remember, Podcast 616 is part of the We Made This podcast network. So stay tuned for for previews of more shows that you can subscribe to in just a moment. So until next time, Podcast 616, disassemble.
Do you like crime stories, books, and people talking about those things? Then you should check out the Red and Buried podcast.
A murder?
A murder.
Oh!
I'm Frankie.
And I'm Sarah.
And in each episode, we pick a different theme and surprise and delight each other with a cheeky little review.
As you started reading, I was like, this sounds like a romance novel. And then you got to monstrous crime.
Yay, there it is. That's what we're here for, isn't it?
We're also regularly visited by many talented and best-selling authors, including the likes of Chris Whittaker, Elizabeth Haynes, Emma Stonex, Fiona Cummins, and a whole lot more.
I obviously listened to the podcast, and I listened to you interviewing Chris Whittaker, and I thought, oh, hey, that sounds like a really good fun podcast.
If you like your crime books with a big side of silly, this is the podcast for you. Listen to the Red and Buried podcast right now, brought to you by the We Made This Network.